Hello, you are listening to End of Life University podcast, real talk about life and death, and this is episode number 202. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to welcome you and thank you for joining me today for another episode here on the podcast. I'll be sharing a solo episode today, talking about conversation skills you need for a successful end-of-life discussion, and I'll get into that in just a moment. But first, I wanted to let you know that for the next three episodes after this, I'll be sharing interviews, partly because I have some really exciting weeks ahead. My son is getting married in 2 weeks, so I'm going to be quite busy preparing for and celebrating his wedding. So I've already recorded some interviews and those will be playing for you over the next few weeks. But once the wedding's over with and I've recovered a little bit, I'll be back probably with a few more solo episodes at that time. And also today, before I get started, I'd like to thank my latest supporters on my page at patreon.com/EOLU. And those are Lori Timmer and Jane Whitlock. Lori and Jane, thanks so much for stepping up and joining the team of supporters who are making monthly contributions to help keep this podcast on the air. I really appreciate you. So I'm going to get into the content now for this episode, but I will have a few more announcements to make at the very end. So stay tuned. As I mentioned, today I'd like to talk to you about conversation skills you need for a successful end-of-life discussion. I've been doing a lot of my own personal research lately on conversation skills, on nonviolent communication, and really thinking about how we talk to one another. And one thing that inspired me is that I've heard from a number of people lately who have had very challenging times trying to discuss end-of-life issues with their family members. And they felt that they failed miserably in their attempts to make progress and to reach consensus about how to address the end of life with an elderly loved one. And so I did some of my own research and learning and quite a bit of reading about what are the skills we really need to help us with these difficult and challenging conversations. And I think that talking about the end of life, talking about death and dying with a loved one can be one of the most difficult conversations we could ever have, partly because it's a taboo subject. It pushes us to look at painful times that are coming ahead in the future. Also, because we're not used to it, we just don't have experience having these kinds of conversations. But this is one of the most important conversations we can ever have with any loved one. So I think it will be helpful for us to take a look at some conversation skills and how they might be helpful to us in this particular area of discussion, talking about the end of life. So one of the first things that I've learned from the research I've done is the importance of preparing in advance before you even have a discussion like this. And let's say, for example, you want to talk to your elderly father about end-of-life issues and what his preferences are and his wishes and how he feels about this topic in general. If you go into that conversation without having really thought through your approach and what you're going to say to him, you may find yourself quickly getting in hot water, either being filled with emotion that changes how you approach the subject and what you say to him, also being triggered by things that he says and being caught off guard in a way by the direction the conversation takes. So here's some ideas for how to prepare before you ever have this conversation, some things to think through and work on before you sit down. So I think the very first thing is to know your goal for the conversation. What is the outcome you want to accomplish by even having this discussion in the first place? And it could be a very focused and small goal, like, for example, I want my father to sign this DNR order because I really think that would be best for him if he refuses CPR in the future. But it could be a much larger goal that I want to talk all about the dying process itself, about what my father values in life and finds meaningful in life, where he wants to die, who he wants to be with him, what type of funeral he wants to have, where he'd like to be buried, or how else he would like to have his body disposed of, and then how he'd like to be remembered by the rest of us. That's a huge subject to cover, but it's important that you know the difference, because your approach to your father will change whether you're looking for one very simple, targeted action step at the end of the conversation, or whether you're really trying to gather a lot of information so that you have a deeper, broader understanding of your father's perspective. So think about it. What is your goal? What are you hoping to accomplish with this conversation? And I will say, if you're looking for that larger, grander picture of your father's feelings about death and dying in general, and after death and legacy and memorial, I think it's important that you view this as not just one conversation, but many conversations that will take place over time. So I want to emphasize that this is a lot of material to cover, most of which is uncomfortable for most people. So be prepared that it's going to take some time if you're looking for this big picture of information from your loved one. The second part of preparing for the conversation is to think about your own biases. What biases do you have toward the person you're talking to? Do you already in your mind have an idea of how that person might react? And is it negative? Are you already thinking, oh no, my father's going to be impossible to talk to about this, or I'm sure he won't understand or appreciate what I'm saying? Also, do you have a bias about the outcome? Are you really attached to the outcome? And do you believe that you know the right answer and you want your father to agree with you and you want to be able to convince your father to do what you believe is the right thing? Because that type of bias may create a stumbling block in the conversation for you. And that's something you might need to work on before you talk to him, is can you manage to let go of your strong attachment to the outcome? So think about it. What biases do you have toward the other person, toward the subject in general, and what attachments do you have toward the outcome of your discussion? And then also, the third thing to think about is, how engaged are your emotions in this topic? Do you feel triggered by any of the things that you'll need to discuss with your parent? And what brings up those triggers, and where are your sensitive points? If you've thought it through in advance, you can prepare yourself a little better for something that might come up during the discussion and be ready for it when it happens. You can also even practice going through this subject where your parent says something like, what, are you trying to kill me? Are you wishing I would die sooner or what? If your parent says something that feels offensive to you or upsetting, you can practice in advance hearing that statement and learning some techniques for staying on an even keel instead of getting triggered and going off into an emotional response. Then the fourth thing to look at as you prepare for the conversation is your attitude. When you really think about how you feel about having the conversation, do you feel negative toward it? And are you expecting it to be difficult? Because that's something you might want to adjust if you can. You might want to try to take a different look at it and imagine that this is going to be a good conversation. This is something important, and we're going to find a way to make this a valuable conversation that brings us together. Because if you go into it with a negative attitude, you can actually sabotage or undermine the conversation right from the beginning. So do what you can to work through any negativity that you have before you ever set up the conversation and initiate it with your parent. So that brings to mind some steps you can take to work on your own mindset about the discussion. So if you recognize you do have kind of a negative attitude about the conversation in the first place, here's some things to work on in your mindset. So this might take a little bit of effort on your part. Maybe in my case, I would use journaling and I would journal about some of these subjects to help me get very clear about what my obstacles are and what's holding me back from having a positive conversation. So under the category of mindset, one of the first steps is to let go of the outcome, as I already mentioned it for now. Be comfortable with just having a conversation and just hearing about your parents' wishes or your loved one's wishes. Let go of having to make a certain outcome happen or having to have a certain action step at the end of the conversation. Even though you believe that you know what's best and you know what's right, and even though you are eager to get that signed advance directive or DNR order or piece of paper, whatever it is that you feel that your father needs to have for his best interest to be served, be content in the very beginning to simply establish some understanding and gain some information and knowledge about your father's feelings rather than having the outcome that ultimately you want to have. In the beginning, allow this conversation to be wherever, whatever it is, and go wherever it does. The next important step is to give up being the expert or the teacher. That's hard for many of us, especially those of us who work in this arena, because we do have expertise. We do have knowledge that the average person doesn't have about end-of-life issues. And we may feel very strongly that it's so important for people to have advance directives. It's important for them to put things in writing. And we may know absolutely that that's the best thing and that will lead to the best end of life for our loved ones. So we value that process and want to see that happen. But if we walk into this conversation with our loved ones as an expert and as the person that already has the answer and knows the way the discussion should end up, we can end up again sabotaging or undermining the entire conversation. And I don't know about your family, but in most families, even though one member of the family has attained expertise and is really an advanced researcher on a certain subject, not everyone in the family is excited to acknowledge that. And so, say Betty has spent all of her career studying advance directives and how people should complete paperwork at the end of life, and is a foremost expert across the country in this subject matter. And even if, though, her family members might know that she's an expert and might appreciate that, they might actually even brag about Betty and how much she knows and how she helps people and lectures and teaches people, when it comes down to actually sitting together and having a conversation, Betty is just the younger sister who used to be annoying, or the sibling who used to always steal the last cookie out of the cookie jar. And so it's very hard for family members to actually give you the respect that you may feel you deserve for the knowledge that you have. And you'll be far better off if you approach the conversation as a student rather than a teacher. And as tempting as it is to want to tell everyone everything you know right from the outset and to come up with the answer and just say, this is what we need to do, this is what should happen, it's most important that you become a listener and a story gatherer, an information seeker and a student, than you be the teacher at that time. There may come a time later on in this process when your expertise is needed and when everyone will willingly turn to you and say, well, what do you know about it? What have you learned? What can you tell us? But that doesn't usually happen right at the beginning. So be willing to let go of being the expert and come in as if you also don't know very much about the subject. As hard as that can be for those of us who do know a lot, it's important to control the ego and stay humble and just stay quiet in the beginning, even though, again, you do have the answers and you probably do know things that other people could stand to learn. Bide your time. There will be opportunities later on in this process when you can share what you know. Another thing to remember about your mindset is try not to take anything personally during this conversation, because again, this is a very sensitive subject. It brings up lots of emotions for everyone concerned. And so other people are likely to get triggered as well. And hopefully you've already looked at your own triggers and figured out what might take you off down an emotional tangent. And so hopefully you figured that out for yourself. But remember that other people are going to be caught up in their emotions and their feelings about the subject, and they might say things that are hurtful, and do your best to not take them personally. Just remember that this is a difficult time for everyone to have this conversation. So if you can keep your head above water and keep yourself from getting pulled down by other people's negativity and pulled down into becoming a victim and feeling hurt by other people, you'll be able to help your loved ones get through this conversation with a little more ease. And along with that, the next step is to find compassion for the other person or people involved in the conversation. Just try to remember that this is challenging and difficult for them. Try to remember that they're doing the best they can, and they may not handle it very well in the beginning, but feel compassion as much as you can for the situation that they're in. They don't have the knowledge and expertise that you do, and they might be more frightened than you are. They might be very fearful of this entire conversation and of what they're being asked to look at. So keep compassion in your heart as much as possible. And maybe you need to work on generating that before the conversation even begins. Spend some time thinking about the person or people you'll be talking with and understanding who they are and what sort of difficulty they might have with this conversation that you're going to begin, so that you generate some compassion for them before you even start the conversation. And so the fifth suggestion for your mindset is that you practice staying centered and calm. And this, of course, comes from just your everyday practice. If you've learned how to stay centered in general in your life, it will serve you really well when you have a difficult conversation. So some of the practices you can use to learn to stay centered are deep breathing, mindfulness, yoga, journaling, anything that helps you become relaxed within your body and focused with your mind. That helps you come into the center of yourself and get into a calm state. And when you can enter into a difficult discussion with that kind of calmness, you will be helpful to everyone else involved in the discussion. You will help all of them tone down their own emotions and calm down and have a more focused and productive discussion. So staying centered, that's something that hopefully you've been working on and practicing in your day-to-day life already. And that's a tool that you can use during difficult conversations. So if you haven't practiced that before, again, write about it in your journal. Think about what helps you feel calmer. For me, taking 2 or 3 deep breaths before I start talking can help me. Also, I just have a way of kind of pulling in and going into my heart and finding compassion, finding love and joy within me, and that helps me come into the present moment in a positive and calm state. So those are the five things you need for your mindset before you start the conversation. I'll review those again. Let go of the outcome for now. Don't be too attached to what you hope is going to happen as a result of the conversation. 2, give up being the expert or the teacher. 3, don't take anything personally. 4, find compassion for the other people and or person involved. And 5, learn how to stay centered and calm within yourself during the conversation. So that's what you need to work on for your mindset. The third thing to look at as you're preparing for this conversation is the setting. Where will this discussion take place, and when and who will be there? So it's very important that you think that through in advance to try to create the optimum conditions. And a lot of it depends on the loved one that you want specifically to learn about their end of life issues and who you think should be present for that. In some cases, it might be best if it's just you and that loved one having this difficult conversation. In some families, it's better if there are other key family members who are also present so that they can hear and take part in the discussion. A lot of it depends on your family though, and the makeup of your family. And if you have a lot of highly emotional people in the family, and if any kind of group discussion like this is likely to deteriorate into some sort of a conflict or a battle, then I would say it's best for sure to start off with your own conversation with a loved one. But do remember, in families where there's a lot of conflict, sometimes people don't like it if they hear that you've had some sort of secretive conversation with a parent that they weren't included in. So you may need to go in with the understanding, I just want to get the background story and get this started with my loved one, with my parent perhaps. Then I'll invite other family members in later for the next conversation that takes place. And you can make that clear, even to your parent that you're talking with, that I'm going to invite the others to come the next time so that we can all discuss this together. So you'll have to think through your own family scenario and what makes the most sense, especially if you have a large family. It can be difficult and challenging. So think very clearly about who should be in the room when this initial conversation takes place. Also think about where will it take place, because this setting can be very important. Are you in a location that's comfortable for everyone? I mean, physically comfortable, where you can sit on couches and perhaps in a circle so that you can all see one another. And is it quiet and free from distractions and interruptions? So that's an important thing to think through. Where will the discussion take place? And I did want to mention, a lot of times in conversation skills teachings that I've been reading about online, it's mentioned that you should always strive for a great deal of eye contact during a difficult decision. But I think that's something you have to decide as well, based on your own personality type and the loved one you're talking to, because some people don't do well with eye contact. In fact, they find it intimidating and overwhelming if there's too much eye contact. So if you and your loved one are both comfortable in each other's presence and comfortable looking each other right in the eye face to face, then I would say arrange the room so that you're sitting directly opposite one another and fairly close enough so that you feel this connection and intimacy between one another. But if either one of you is not so comfortable with that kind of intimacy, and maybe not so comfortable with just eye to eye, face to face contact, you might want to be sitting at a table where you're not directly in front of each other. One of you is on the end and the other one is on the side of the table, so that it gives you a chance to turn your heads to look at each other, but also turn away in a comfortable fashion back and forth, so that you're not compelled to look directly into the face of the other person. And I realize that all the conversation experts out there would say, oh, no, no, you have to be face to face. You have to make this intimate. I definitely am aware that not everyone is comfortable with that kind of seating arrangement and that kind of intimate contact. So think about it. what's most comfortable for you and your loved one, because you might really do better at a table. That's something actually where I'm comfortable at a table where I can place notes in front of me. I have a place to put my hands and rest them, or, you know, even my elbows on the table if I need to. And again, sitting next to someone around at the corner of the table does allow you easily to look away when you need to and to turn your gaze back and forth so that it doesn't feel so awkward as that you're forced to look into the eyes of the other person if you're not ready for that. And especially when you're just beginning this conversation, that might be too much togetherness and too much intimacy in the very beginning. So think that through before you start the conversation so you can arrange the room and the setting so that it feels just right. The other thing to arrange is to make sure that you have plenty of time and that you're not in a situation where, well, we have to get this discussion over with in 15 minutes because we have a dinner reservation coming up. Make sure there's ample time and you don't feel rushed, and make sure also that you kind of let go of the timing of it. If it seems like you attempt the conversation and it doesn't go anywhere and your loved one is resistant and doesn't want to talk to you about it, maybe you have to let it go for that day and that time. And maybe you go back and regroup and figure out what could I change and how could I try this again the next time, and figure out what would make it better and more likely that my loved one would want to participate and feel comfortable in this situation. You might need to rethink your entire strategy if it doesn't go well. So never force the conversation if it just doesn't seem like it's getting anywhere or happening, or if you feel a lot of resistance coming up or a lot of negativity from the other person. Just be willing to kind of generously and gladly let go of it and move on and talk about something different. So again, this brings up the importance of having these discussions far in advance. You may not have the luxury of time if you're in a situation where your loved one is having surgery the next day and the doctor needs to know if they want to be resuscitated if their heart stops beating on the table. You know, you may not have the luxury of time. This conversation may have to happen right now, and you may need to have a doctor in the room to help answer questions. So having these conversations long before they're necessary gives you this incredible luxury of spreading it out over time, of going gradually and slowly and gently exploring ideas and thoughts and learning together about what's possible and what fits best with your loved one's preferences. So I can't emphasize enough, as you contemplate the conversation, do it now. Be thinking now of how and when you're going to talk about it, and waiting until something happens, until there's a health crisis, doesn't usually turn out so well for everyone concerned. So now I want to move into some specific tools that you can use during the conversation to help you. And after that, I'll just go through kind of step by step how to structure the conversation. So the first tool I'll mention to you, which I read about from an author online who calls it zooming in or zooming out. And I liked that concept based on photography. You know, sometimes you use the zoom lens to get really close and see the details. And sometimes you zoom out to see the bigger picture and the setting. And so think of your conversation in that way. I think it's usually helpful to start in a zoomed out perspective where you're just discussing generalities and the bigger picture of things. And at specific times, you may need to zoom in to the details. And for the example I mentioned of asking your father how he feels about CPR, that's a zoom in. That's a subject you zoom in on that you have to discuss specifically, and you need to have facts about that subject, and you need to be able to present that information to your father to help him make a decision. But that's a state of being zoomed in. And in your conversation with your father, you really don't want to walk in and immediately ask him, I need to know how you feel about CPR. Will you sign this DNR order? I think it would be the best thing for you. You don't want to walk in and immediately zoom in. You want to start out in a zoomed out perspective where you look at the bigger picture and talk about some other things, approach the subject more generally and gradually before you zoom in. Another thing that can happen if you zoom in too quickly in a conversation and you see your loved one getting uncomfortable, say you've just asked about, would you rather be buried or cremated, or have you thought about anything else that you might want us to do with your body after you die? If you see your loved one getting uncomfortable, that's a sign maybe you need to zoom out again. You might have zoomed in to that topic too quickly and you need to zoom back out, get back out to a little more general conversation and that's more comfortable for your loved one. So keep that in mind, zooming in and zooming out, and you'll gradually develop your own feel for how and when to zoom into a topic. And it might even be that your loved one leads you there by a comment that they make. So you'll be listening carefully and paying attention to details to know when it's time to zoom in. So that's the first tool you can use, zooming in and out. The second tool is clarifying questions. And so you cannot go wrong by just asking questions of your loved one. If you can get your loved one to talk a little bit and tell you a little bit of a story or a little bit about how they feel about something or something they've been thinking about, you can't go wrong by asking clarifying questions. And so if, say, your father says, oh, I didn't like what happened when my brother Ray died, then you might ask, oh, what was it? What was it about Ray's death that was upsetting to you? And if he describes something, you could say, oh, really? What did it bother you that he was in the hospital at all? Or you just keep asking questions to make sure you're getting a clearer and clearer picture of exactly what it was that was upsetting for your father. As you ask these clarifying questions, you're gaining more and more understanding, perhaps of your father's underlying fears or some of his biases or even some misinformation that he might not have, something that he didn't understand. And maybe it's an old wound or pain or grief that he's been carrying for a long time that has caused him to develop a bias. And as you're just innocently asking these questions to get deeper into the story, you'll be gaining really valuable information that will help you have more and more compassion for your father and deeper understanding of why he feels the way he feels and what issues he might need to look at and overcome in order to make a decision for himself about his end-of-life care. So that's the tool of clarifying questions. The next tool is relating. And when you relate, this can happen after you've asked a clarifying question. And, you know, maybe your father says something about, I've never liked hospitals at all. And you could say, oh, I understand that. I've had that feeling at times too of being really uncomfortable in a hospital. And when you can share a feeling that you have, it has to be sincere and authentic, not something that you're making up. But when you can relate in an authentic way and say, oh, yes, I can understand that. I can relate to that. That happened once to me too. That helps you gain common ground and helps you start building this consensus and bridge of understanding between the two of you that will be very valuable as the discussion continues. So that is relating. The fourth one is reflecting. And reflection is a really helpful tool that you can use also after your father has told you something about how he feels, and he says, oh, I just don't like the idea of cremation. I'm kind of afraid of fire. And so then you just reflect back, so I understand. The idea of fire and burning is unpleasant for you, and so cremation doesn't sound like a good idea. Is that right? You reflect back what you heard and you repeat it to make sure you heard it clearly, but also because it's really helpful to the other person to hear that reflection on something they've just said. And here's why, because sometimes, and we've all had this experience, sometimes we've tried to explain something to someone else and we end up tacking on a little statement that we didn't really think about in advance, that we didn't prepare, but something just comes out. We blurt out something that we weren't expecting to say. And sometimes those little blurted comments actually contain the deepest truth of all. They're actually very revealing. And when we can pick up on those and really hear those comments that get made and then reflect on them, we give the other person a chance to actually hear what they just said, to hear it for themselves and realize like, oh, yeah, I wasn't really thinking about that at first, but you're right. That is why I don't like the idea of cremation. I was really scared of fire since that experience I had as a child. So your reflection can help them reflect on experiences or feelings that may even be coming out from their own subconscious that they weren't thinking about, but that get blurted out during the process of the conversation. So that's why reflecting back what someone says to you can be so powerful. The fifth technique or tool that you can use is reframing. And so reframing really just describes taking a different perspective on a subject. And you may need to help your loved one with this. You need to know how to reframe your own perspectives so that you're not just looking at one solution or one outcome to a problem, so that the way that you think about end of life and death and dying is one perspective, but so that you can reframe and take the perspective of another person and understand, oh, but I can see why for my father, it's completely different than how I view it. So reframing is honing your ability to see from different perspectives, but also learning how to help your loved one see a different perspective as well. And so you begin by looking at the perspective that's in front of you and imagining either stepping back, zooming out to take a bigger view of what's happening. That's one way to reframe, zooming out, or shifting. Perhaps you imagine you see the issue or the problem as if it's an object in the middle of the room. And when you reframe, you're going to walk around that perspective or that issue to the other side of the room to look at it from a different point of view. And so you can literally imagine yourself walking around the issue and trying to see it from a completely different frame of mind. What if you were a totally different person who saw this differently? What if you didn't have the knowledge and expertise you have right now? How might you be looking at this issue? So that's one way of reframing. It just helps keep you from getting stuck in your own biases about how things should be and reminds you to try to take the perspective of the other person that you're speaking with. Next, you can use the technique of storytelling, which is always valuable. And for me personally, I try to cultivate stories in my life experience, personal things that have happened with me, stories I've heard other people tell, or general stories I've heard about family situations. And I carry those with me so that I have a little story I can tell if I need it. In the middle of a situation like this, sometimes the perfect solution is to tell a story. It takes the focus off of whatever personal emotion is coming up and allows you to use the story of someone else to illustrate the point you're trying to make, but also allows the other person to get outside their own head and their own emotion to look at a situation that's somewhat similar but involves other people. So stories can allow you to instruct and teach other people, but also to open the mind and the heart a little bit to see different perspectives. So not only is it important to have your own stories that you can tell here and there whenever they're needed, but you should get good at listening to the stories of other people. Many times our loved ones are just longing to tell us their stories from the past because they don't always have opportunities to talk about the past or tell stories. So think of yourself as a story gatherer and be prepared to listen and ask for stories because that might help you understand more than anything where your loved ones' issues and biases are coming from when you hear their stories from the past. And then finally, the last tool that you can develop is the ability to recenter. And so I talked before in your mindset about the importance of being centered and calm when you come into a situation. But you'll be learning over time to get back to that position of being centered. So recentering is actually a skill because you have to know whenever you're having a difficult conversation, you're going to be knocked off balance from time to time. Something's going to come up, something will happen that will trigger an emotion or push you one way or another. And so it's important for you to develop the skill of recentering. For me, I talk about this a lot, but I use my breath. Simply taking a deep breath sometimes is all I need to get me back on center. I also often use little mantras that I might say to myself that remind me, like something like, don't take this personally. Everything's working out just as it should. Don't worry about it. It'll all be fine. Sometimes I have little things I say to myself if I feel myself starting to go off and getting overwhelmed with emotion. I'll say the mantra, take a deep breath, and it'll help me refocus and get back into that calm and centered state. So recentering is a skill you can learn to develop so that you'll have it available to you. And sometimes it can help you keep going during a conversation rather than getting derailed and having to bail out on the conversation altogether. So now we'll move on to talking about the steps to a good conversation about end-of-life issues. And so the very first step, this is after you've done all the preparation and worked on your mindset and learned all the tools and practiced them, and you're ready to finally have the conversation because you've chosen the right setting and the right people are there. The very first step is to initiate the discussion. And this is your introduction. And this is so important because it's going to really determine how the rest of the conversation goes, how you get it started. So think this through carefully. Do the best you can to pick the right way of introducing the topic. And again, if it falls flat and it doesn't go anywhere, or you meet with a lot of resistance or even anger, then you might know, that wasn't the best introduction, and you might need to start over another time with introducing the topic in a different way. But I'll give you some thoughts about how you might initiate the conversation. And one of the most effective ways, I think, to get the conversation started is to simply ask a question. And here's what I like to ask, and at least I ask this of my mother when we were having an end-of-life conversation about her wishes. I asked her to tell me the story of her parents and what it was like for her when they died, and she was eager to tell me those stories. It was actually important to her. That's something that she had carried with her for a number of years, and so we went through the stories of her mother's death and then her father's death, and so many subjects came up that were really important as I just sat and listened. I listened to all the details of both of their deaths. I listened to how she felt about it, the regrets she had, the questions she had, the doubts she felt, the pain that came up for her, and the grief that she was still carrying about their deaths. And that was extremely valuable to me. And here's just a couple of things. One was that her mother had heart disease and had been resuscitated at one point and had told her that she never wanted to go through CPR again. She had been successfully resuscitated in a hospital, but she said it was horribly painful and that prior to the resuscitation, she had been in a place that was full of light and warmth and love, and that all she wanted was to stay there, and that the resuscitation brought her back into a very painful reality. And she said, please don't ever let anyone do that to me again. So by hearing that story, that told me my mom already had some negativity about CPR and resuscitation, and that's something I could refer back to and go back to those details of my grandmother's death. Then her father died alone in the hospital in his sleep one night, and she had a lot of regrets about the fact that he was in the hospital and all by himself when he died. So that gave us something else to talk about. And my next question after listening to all those stories was, how would you like it to be for you when it comes to be your time? And it was a natural lead-in to go on to that conversation. And I didn't have to take her any direction. I just asked her if she had any thoughts about what would she want to be different. And she did. Right away, she said, I don't want CPR either. My mom told me it was terrible and I don't want that. And I don't want to be in a hospital when I die. I want to be at home. So it led very easily to her talking about what she did want. And granted, it didn't lead to all the details that we needed in order to complete her entire plan for the end of life, but it got us off to a great start discussing those issues in the beginning. So that's one of my favorite questions to ask. What was it like for you when your parent or some other loved one died? And how did you feel about that? And what thoughts do you have about that? So again, it's using storytelling and getting your loved one to talk and tell you that story. I think that can be really powerful. Another way of using storytelling is to tell your own story. And so it might be one thing I also advocate as you prepare for this conversation is that you complete your own advance directives. Maybe you get the living will form for your state, or you download 5 wishes or the Conversation Project Starter Kit. Something, some type of paperwork or form that you can complete so that you yourself have been through this process of answering difficult questions about what you might want. And you can tell the story to your loved one about that, what it was like for you as you thought about these questions, and tell why you thought it was important for you to do that, why you wanted to go through this and look at these issues and answer the questions. You can even talk about the choices you made and why you decided on certain things. So you have a huge story that you can tell all around your own efforts and the work that you've done. And that's a great lead-in when you explain why you thought it was important for you to have an advance directive. After your loved one has listened to you and taken in all that information, you can say, have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about any of those questions? And that can be another natural lead-in. So you can see the value of storytelling here. You could use someone else's story, perhaps the story of a friend or of another loved one. And remember when Uncle Ray was taken from the nursing home in an ambulance, and that's not really what he wanted. You could use a story that the two of you share for someone else you know or love and something that happened to them, and that story could trigger the conversation. So storytelling, it's huge and very valuable as a tool. So I think stories are a good way, either asking for their story or telling your story, they're a good way to initiate this conversation. Another thing you can do is to request help, and you can state that you have a concern for the future and that you want to be able to help your loved one down the road when the time comes, and you want to make sure that they have the best care possible and that they get everything that they want and need but that you're not sure you know what that is and that you need some help understanding what they might want. So by asking for help, it sort of automatically puts the other person in a position of wanting to give to you. You're not demanding anything from them. You're requesting help. And that's a good stance to begin this conversation so the other person feels like, oh, well, I will help you by talking to you about it and telling you. The worst thing I think you could do is to go in and make demands on the other person and being too confrontational and saying, you don't even have a living will. You need to fill this out now. We need to know what you want. And, you know, being the expert or being too demanding or too confrontational. The more you can be just gentle and asking questions and curious, I think the easier the conversation will go for you. Again, of course, it might depend on the personality and the temperament of your loved one. And you will know that best. You'll know the style of conversation that works best for your loved one. So give that some thought as you're considering the setting. You know, how do you talk to one another normally about things? Because you might be a family that is a little bit more in your face and stating things very directly and bluntly to one another. And that might be fine to use as a conversation technique for you too in your family. So those are a few ideas. Initiate using a question and asking your loved one for a story, telling your own story, requesting help. You could also paint a picture if there is something coming up like surgery, or if your loved one has had a change in health status. You could paint a picture for them of why this is a good time for you to ask these questions and why you might need to know some information. Like, for example, you're going in for surgery. If you don't wake up after surgery, I might have to make some decisions for you. And it would be helpful if I knew what you might want. So something like that. You can, based on the situation or the circumstance that your loved one is in. So think through carefully how you're going to introduce the topic and have a little strategy in mind of how you'll start. And again, it might fall flat. It might not go anywhere. And you may decide, okay, that didn't work. I've got to regroup and think of something else. I can also recommend as an introduction, watching a film together. And one thing that I have found that I think is fairly simple is watching something like the movie The Bucket List, or even you don't even have to watch the movie, but you can just bring up the idea of the bucket list, like, oh, you know, my friend and I, we sat down, we had this funny conversation about our bucket lists and what we had on our bucket lists, and I want to do this and she or he wants to do that. Have you ever made a bucket list? What is it you've thought of? Like, what if you only had a year to live? What would you want to do? You can bring it up as just an interesting conversation to have that you've maybe shared with someone else and get the whole thing started in that way. So talking about a popular film, and the bucket list is one that I like to use, and talking just in general about a bucket list or the idea of only having a year left to live. What would you want to do if you only had 1 year? That can be a good way to get started in the beginning and have this discussion. You might not get specific answers about end-of-life preferences, but you will have opened the door, and that can help you move on the next time to another discussion where you can go more deeply, you can zoom in on some of the other issues. So again, I think the next step is to begin asking some clarifying questions based on the information that you get from your introduction. And so we talked about that, clarifying questions as a technique. And based on whatever you hear your loved one say or learn, ask a few more questions and try to go a little bit deeper if you can and get a little bit more information. And your goal here is really to build understanding between the two of you. So while you're asking clarifying questions and reflecting back what you hear your loved one say, you're also going to be relating and telling them, oh, yes, I feel that way too. Yes, I had an experience like that too. I understand what you're saying. So you're creating this foundation or bridge between you of understanding, of shared experience, shared feelings, a common perspective on the end of life, and you're building a strong foundation that you can keep building upon over time and add to as you have further discussions. So again, the clarifying questions, reflection, and relating in order to build understanding. Those are some of the next steps that you take in this conversation. As part of this process, be sure to acknowledge the perspective of your loved one and acknowledge that they have a right to see things however they see it, and they have a right to their feelings, whatever they are, and that you're not really coming in here trying to change how they feel or change the way they see things or change who they are. You're not coming in with answers. You're coming in desiring to understand them and to have better knowledge of their wishes and preferences. So offer plenty of relating type comments and empathy to your loved one as you're listening and having this dialogue back and forth. Another thing that you can do at this point in the conversation is to express your concerns. This would be after you've done a lot of listening and you feel that you have a perspective or some understanding of where the loved one is coming from. And if your loved one says something like, oh, I don't think I need to have orders like that. I don't think I need to decide anything. I don't think I need to know. At that point, you can express why you're concerned and why it feels important to you. And this will be one of the first times you have expressed your own opinion and your own perspective in fairly strong terms so that your loved one can see that and understand it. Up to this point, you've spent all your time really listening and validating what they have to say, but now you're expressing your concerns, and do it without judgment or without blame, but just talk about, well, from what I understand, things may not go so well if you don't have these wishes in writing, and you can get better care and you will have a better experience if you have made some of these decisions. And that's what I care about. I want you to have the best care you can possibly have at the very end of life. So do all the listening and story gathering first, then begin to express your concerns and see how that goes. Again, you might run into a brick wall and find that your loved one doesn't want to hear your thoughts or your concerns, and you may have to end the conversation at that point if you meet a lot of resistance and feel like it's bringing up a lot of emotion or negativity. Like, that might be a good time to agree to talk again some other time. Another thing that you can work on is to agree to get more information. You could ask your loved one, well, you know, I know that you feel like CPR is a good idea. I understand that. Would you be willing for both of us together to explore CPR and some of the information about it together to see what other people think about CPR? So you get consensus with them around getting more information. And again, you might be the expert who already has the information, and you'll have to decide in this case, is it acceptable and a positive thing in your family for you to step up at that point and say, I have the information, I am an expert, I know this? Or is it better for you to just step back and remain the student and say, could we explore this together? I could look into some information that we might all read together, or a video we could watch together about this so we could learn about it together. So sometimes, again, as I mentioned, you have to humble yourself and not be the expert, but be the student with your family members. And so I think if you do reach a brick wall, it's a time when you might say, could we talk again in the future and perhaps review some information together about this and get consensus around that, around a future conversation when you can go deeper again. It might be that you can ask if you could introduce some information at that point. Maybe people will be open to it and ready for it. And then you could step up and let them know what you've read and what you know and what your experience tells you. But you, again, you have to read your own family and know how well you'll be accepted as the expert in that situation. When you're ready to conclude the conversation, I think it's important, first of all, to get permission to talk again. Express your gratitude for having this conversation at all and how much it means to you and how helpful it is and is going to be. Ask for permission to talk again in the future to continue the discussion if other things come up, but that maybe there will be more things to discuss down the road, and gather that permission at that point. And then always express your love for the other person and the fact that this discussion is coming from your love. And the reason to talk about this is that you love the other person and you want them to have what's best and what they really want. I think that's the best way to conclude the discussion each time you have it. Just remember that gratitude, permission to talk again, and love. So I know that's been a lot of information that I've covered here, but I hope it's been helpful. I was amazed at how much I found when I started doing research on conversation skills and how helpful all of it has been to me at really looking at how I discuss difficult things with other people. So I hope it's been helpful to you also. So before I say goodbye, just a couple of announcements to remember. If you go to the show notes for this page, which is eolupodcast.com, and this is episode number 202, you will find there a little handout that I'm going to make with some of this information on it that you can download if you'd like to have it just to write on perhaps your own notes about how to create your own script maybe for an end-of-life conversation. And also you'll find links to my upcoming events at the Open Center in New York City. One is on September 6th and Author Night, where I'll be presenting my book, What Really Matters, and doing a book signing and a workshop on Saturday called Earth Lessons for the Soul. So that's Saturday, September 7th at the Open Center in New York City. So you can come to the show notes and you'll find a link for both of those events. And finally, if you'd like to join the team and become a supporter of this podcast, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/EOLU, and sign up there to make a monthly contribution of as little as $2 a month to help support the podcast and keep it on the air. And thanks again to everyone who has already joined the team. So for now, I'll say goodbye until next week. Remember that we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever happens next, and love your life. Love every minute of it right now. It's going by really quickly. Bye-bye.